the UK Prime Minister's chief economic advisor, Ed Balls, saying last week that this depression is going to be worse than the Great Depression. It'll be the worst depression in more than 100 years, and that the effects are going to last for 15 years. We have already seen 20 million jobs lost in China in the last few months, and this is only the beginning. I know the trade unions are very worried about China, and you have lost 3 million jobs in the United States, but in China, they have already lost 20 million jobs because of the loss of exports to the United States and the rest of the world. And this is only China. What about Africa? What about so many other countries? We could have 1 billion more people in the developing world plunging into new poverty because of this crisis.
Martin Kaur, I want to thank you for being with us to the Third World Network and the South Center. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. It's Habanero with today's edition of Concert Billboard for Wednesday, February 18th. The Take Action Tour, Cute Is What We Aim For, is performing at the Fillmore, New York at Irving Plaza.
Hang on. We can fix this. Sorry, it's not Wednesday yet, but it will be soon. But right now it's Tuesday.
Hi. I'm Habanero with today's edition of Concert Billboard for Tuesday, February 17th. Enrique Bunbury is at the Roseland Ballroom. Medeski Martin and Wood at the 92Y in Tribeca. Fujiya in Miyagi at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola. For Wednesday, February 18th, the Take Action Tour. Cute Is What We Aim For, performing at Fillmore, New York at Irving Plaza. Jim Betty and Pam Moran at the Overtime Sports Bar in Smithtown. Medeski Martin and Wood at Le Poisson Rouge. Loudon Wainwright III with Marion Lagoudis at the Blender Theater at Gramercy. Joe Venati at the Highline Ballroom in New York City. For Thursday, February 19th, Leonard Cohen at the Beacon Theater. LL Cool J at Nokia Theater at Times Square. Kathy Griffin at the WAMU Theater at the Madison Square Garden. And Joe Venati again at Le Poisson Rouge. And that wraps it up for today's Concert Billboard listing. You can find out more at our website, wusb.fm. And get out there and see some local music. Support the local music scene for some good, clean fun. And thanks for listening to WUSB Stony Brook. You succeed and never cower in the hour of need. You left a longer and reassured seat that don't. And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Yes, our cover has been blown. Now you know the truth. Concert Billboard is pre-recorded. Yeah. So the only way that I could possibly explain the same recording happening like that for Wednesday and for Tuesday. But yeah, okay, so what? We do it. We pre-record things. It makes things easier. It makes things more efficient. Otherwise, you have to have people come in here several times a day to read the same thing. And that's no good for anybody. All right, it's 4 minutes after 6 o'clock. What happened? Wow, we're running a bit late, and we're going to be ending a bit early tonight because tonight's the final Tuesday basketball game of the season, women's basketball, a home game against Vermont. So that's going to be exciting coming up 6:45. But it's 5 minutes after 6 o'clock right now, and the program is off the wall, and a very exciting and positive announcement. At least I think so. Yes, we've. After a long and contentious, sometimes contentious, selection process, I'm happy to announce tonight that we have a prospective new theme for the show to usher in the Obama years and to bring us into the next decade. And so without further ado, I'd like to present, pending confirmation by the full WUSB staff, the new theme for Off the Wall. Thank you.
All right, there it is. The selection, after many, many days of pouring through all kinds of music, that is my selection. And at first, I have to admit, I wasn't very happy with my selection. In fact, I was thinking of opposing it for a little while, because it actually comes from a film from 1988 called Thin Blue Line. And I was originally looking for something a bit more modern, a bit newer. But after debating it, I realized this does sort of make sense. We're kind of going back to the 80s, and a sound that we didn't hear back then, or at least I didn't hear back then, and now it's as if it's a new sound. Or maybe it's an old sound. Who's to say? Anyway, we're probably going to have additional music to have underneath as the show goes on, assuming that this is voted on and accepted by the full station, as is our custom here when we propose a new theme. And we do have to go through the process, and it's a good process. It takes time sometimes. And of course, we want to hear what you think about the new theme as well. And hopefully within a week, the hearings will be over and we'll have an official new theme. Would be nice. Yeah, I miss the old theme, I do, but I don't miss the old days. The old days of the Bush administration, they're gone. They're finished. And it's kind of cool to not have him to make fun of anymore and to actually be looking ahead. Now, this whole stimulus thing has been signed. It became law today. And Obama said today does not mark the end of our economic troubles. Did anybody think it did? It does mark the beginning of the end, the beginning of, that could be used out of context, couldn't it? Is it the beginning of the end? Yeah. Born-agains will get a kick out of that. It's the end of days. The beginning of what we need to do to create jobs for Americans scrambling in the wake of layoffs, to provide relief for families worried they won't be able to pay next month's bills, and to set our economy on a firmer foundation. And, you know, I do kind of get it. I mean, I'm not an economist. I don't understand the economy at all. I just basically try not to find myself out on the street and try to pay my bills and things like that. And I think that's all we can really hope to do. But it does make sense that you kind of need to invest something if you want to pay off. And we haven't been investing. We haven't been investing in our own infrastructure, in our own economy, in our own day-to-day lives. We've been throwing money around on all kinds of craziness, rich people and unnecessary wars and all sorts of other nonsense. And it's amazing to see the people who are criticizing this, the people who are saying, you're putting our kids' future into a mortgage. These are the same people that drove us into the bottomless pit called Iraq. Not that the country was a bottomless pit, but it became a bottomless pit after we started digging around. And no apologies for that. No debate on that. That just happened. And that's well over $1 trillion in debt right there. So as far as I'm concerned, they have no right to say anything. This at least is an idea that has not yet been tried. So for that alone, new guy on the job, new idea, let's give it a shot. We've already blown a lot on old ideas, and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to have the same thing tried over and over again. And, you know, I got to say, seeing how Obama reached out to the Republicans and tried to get them to take his side and to compromise and things like that, I think that made him look pretty good. I think that made him look like he was trying. And then to see the vote by the Republicans just en masse, everybody voting the way they always vote, together with themselves, except for the three senators. Three senators out of, what, how many representatives and senators together? Something like 600? That's all they could do. That's as much as they could bend. Meanwhile, you had Democrats voting against the stimulus bill. They tend to be somewhat flexible. They debate things amongst themselves. They don't vote as the Borg collective. But in this particular case, Obama reached out, tried to negotiate. In fact, he even gave away, I think, more than he should have. He started out by saying, yes, we'll have more in the way of tax cuts, which I don't really think is the answer. But he gave that to them without actually getting to the point of their refusing to go along. And then they refused to go along after he gave that to them. So it just looks like they're playing politics as usual, and he at least tried. And now, well, now he had the votes necessary all along. So we'll see where this goes. I saw there's all kinds of reports as to what the stimulus is going to mean. And in fact, what I'd like to do Let's do this, because the basketball game's coming up, and it's probably easier if we take phone calls in the early part of the show. So let's give out the phone number, 631-632-9872. If you're outside the country, country code 1. Let's give the new callers a chance first, people who have not called, let's say, in the last month. How about that? We'll consider that new callers. Give us a call. Let us know if the stimulus is a good idea for you. Let us know if the economy is affecting you. And we'll kind of take it from there. See if this is something that is a good thing, a bad thing. None of us are experts here. All we can do is commiserate together and hopefully find some kind of comfort there. Again, our phone number, country code 1, area code 631, phone number 632-9872.
Hi, this is Ira from Yola Tango, and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, Long Island's top oldies and weather station.
And here I am in delay, ready to take phone calls. And we'll go to the phones if we see... two or three ringing. How's that? That's not too many to ask for. We're not asking for money or anything like that. So would be nice to hear, I guess, a human point of view rather than all the pundits. But looking at the stimulus, I saw one report that kind of outlined who the winners and the losers were. And the winners, according to this, and this makes me really happy, high-speed and inner-city rail. Now, that went from $500 million in the House bill to $2.25 billion to something like $8 billion in the final version. $8 billion in the final version for high-speed rail. I mean, that's incredible. From $500 million to $8 billion. Think of the jump that is. And there also is $5.9 billion provision for public transit. Now, Amtrak picked up $500 million from both House and Senate versions to a total of $1.3 billion. And that bill stipulates that no more than 60% go to the Northeast Corridor, which is the one part of the rail system that works. So let's build more Northeast Corridors, except don't call it that, obviously. NASA, another one of my pet projects, they banked just more than $2 billion, including $400,000 for science/global warming research. Losers, military construction, and the FBI. Need I say more? It sounds pretty good to me. All right, let's see us out there. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hi. Where are you calling from?
Brentwood.
Brentwood. So how is your economic situation?
I just wanted to say that Chanel Latimer, a Stony Brook graduate, will be performing at playing piano at the Brentwood Library Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
Do I have to talk about the stimulus? Am I required to talk about
this? Well, what do you want to talk about besides the
I want to talk about, like, Oprah Winfrey. I once was watching
You want to talk about
show,
Oprah Winfrey?
And I heard her say that the black people claim, like to claim Tiger Woods, but that his mother is Asian. So it's as if they want her to deny him.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, him to deny his mother, rather. But I noticed at the same time that they're doing that she's referring to Obama as the first black president. And isn't that asking him to deny his mother?
Yes, I agree. I mean, he's half white, half black. A lot of people seem to forget that.
So he's the first interracial president.
Mm-hmm.
But in America, if you look black, you're black. I mean, if the cops stop Tiger Woods and want to give him a hard time and say, get out the car if you blank, they're not going to say, leave the Asian half in the car.
No, I suppose they won't do that.
But if Obama, for example, looked like Brad Pitt or Robert Redford or any white guy,
uh-huh,
he looks Scandinavian, let's say.
Right.
Well, would he still be the black president?
I don't think he'd be identified as such. I mean, he'd be just as black as he is now, but...
he wouldn't be... Would he be referred to as the first black president if he looked like, you know, a Scandinavian person?
Only by those of us who know the facts as far as the percentages and things like that. But do you think...
I mean, even like, would he have garnered black support the way Obama did if he looked different? I mean...
I don't know. I don't know.
You live in this country, too.
But do you think that that identifying him as the first black president, do you think now that makes us turn a corner so we don't have to always be categorizing candidates by race anymore?
I think that's precisely what I'm saying, in a sense that... But people are behaving as if that's like, I'm a little bit tired of all of that.
Uh-huh.
Jesse Jackson crying and all of that. The fact of the matter is, by now we should have had three two or three black presidents already.
Yeah, and women presidents as well.
Precisely. I mean, if you didn't see that movie Glory, like 200,000 black men fought in that war. I've watched TV and I hear people say, "We gave you your freedom." And this was a very dangerous thing to do because the Southerners would shoot you right on the spot for Southern hospitality and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just that they would return you to slavery. They frequently just summary execution. And the people who were killing them and fighting the war had absolutely nothing to gain. They didn't own slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying is that, it's very complicated, the racial thing in America, because black people were owned, they were being, I mean, if you own the most a beautiful woman, whomever you think is beautiful, and she's blooming, you're not going to have sex with her. She has no standing before the law. So there's a lot of, if you look at our genome, there's a lot of mixing in this country, black and white, white and black, that as a result of that rape thing. So even if there was someone who doesn't have a black parent, in the immediate sense, the way Obama did,
uh-huh.
you could have plenty of white ancestors as a result of rape. I mean, if you own a really beautiful woman, you're not going to do anything to her? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, interesting questions. I think we're in new territory now. So I mean, I think that's a good thing that we finally arrived at this stage. Maybe we can stop fixating on these issues so much.
Not elected because, like, I hear conservatives refer to Jimmy Carter as hapless all the time, but they didn't talk about Bush that way. But he got elected because the mess this country is in, and he was lucky to come at the right time. In that sense, I hope he's lucky because this stimulus thing, I'm doubtful about it. Like Reagan was very lucky, but they refer to him as hapless. But that guy was pretty hapless, and I think that in the I lost my point there. He is not radical things are required, and I don't think he's nervous about making those leaps. The people he brought with him to Washington are some of the same types of people that helped put us in this mess, his Treasury Secretary.
Well, yeah, but you need people that have some experience, some connection. So you're gonna see that. You're going to see people who are linked in some way.
There's no one else competent, like the guy that writes for the New York Times, Kruger. There aren't any other people besides these sort of...
No, I'm sure there are. I mean, I'd like to see Ralph Nader in a position of power just to see what would happen.
I mean, come on. And the thing that bothers me is like people like Clinton, who I thought of as a Republican. He helped move this further to the right. it's absurd that the media constantly says the Democratic guy has to go to the center. Nobody told Reagan not to do that. Nobody said that about Reagan or Bush. They were able to be as right-wing as they wanted to be. And I think Obama should go in the other direction. I think the stimulus, all that stuff, is not radical enough. This country needs major change.
So how would you implement that?
Oh, I think for one of the things they have to do, look at all the money they just gave away to these people who should be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Clinton who eliminated the Glass-Steagall Act that put us in this mess, not a Republican.
Right, right.
And what I'm saying is one of the things they have to do is stop looking at everything in the short term. Look toward doing things in the future. It was government intervention that got us computers, lasers, all sorts of things that we think of coming out of as private industry. But all of that is going into the defense. All of the money, the research. We have to create new industries because we don't make anything anymore.
Right, that's true.
I don't know how we got into this mess. It's all juggling. Paper money and computers, but they have to come up with. He already talks about green industry, coming up with green industry. We have to put scientists to work, out of the business of just making smart bombs, to create new industries, and we have to keep those jobs here. Create new industries, new ideas, and rebuild the whole manufacturing structure of the United States. Ross Perot. They used to make him sound like he was crazy, but he constantly spoke about the fact that you can't be a great country and you don't make anything. You don't manufacture anything.
Mm-hmm.
The media constantly said, well, we'll be a service industry. Well, how's that working out? You know what I'm saying? But
right.
He's got to be radical, and I think he's afraid, especially in the early part of But the difference between him and like Reagan, those guys, they're never afraid to do what they want to do.
Yeah, well, they have it very easy. They simply say my way is the only right way, and there's no room for compromise.
Well, but the thing is, somebody on the other side should think the same way.
I agree. No, I totally agree that the left is not nearly strong enough in this country. They're way too timid. Thing is, you know, from Obama's point of view, he was elected with, what, 52%? Not exactly a mandate.
There were a lot of 8%. And Bush got barely half a percentage, or a percentage and a half.
You mean
and
McCain.
Bush said, I got a capital now.
Uh-huh.
It's absurd. Look, he can't go Clinton on us. And he can't think small. He's got to think big, and that's why he was put there. He doesn't seem to understand that. That's why he was put there. Social Security, you can't get elected if you're against that, but that's a very commie socialist idea. Medicare, you can't get elected if you're against that, but that's a very commie socialist idea. There's all sorts of things that they keep saying we're a conservative country. Oh, how do we get those two things if we're that conservative? The people need to be led.
Mm-hmm.
They were led by Reagan, but they were led the wrong way into the talking about having capitalism free to do whatever they want. And I spoke to you once about Reagan, and you said that a lot of people said that he was so great. I said to you, in the short term, you could always make that case. You could say Hitler built the Autobahn and made the Germans proud and full employment and stuff. But then, when you look at his whole history, you know, he was not that great a guy. He.
Yeah, people soon came to realize that. The thing is, Reagan, it's been 20, 30 years now almost, and people still say he's great.
Him.
Yeah, I have a feeling history might judge him a little too kindly.
Well, look, we're living the... And like I say, Clinton continued that same nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But the people can be taken in the opposite direction. But he can't be timid.
Right. No, I totally agree with you, and I hope he's not, and I hope that he has some bold initiatives in the other direction, and they work.
Yes.
Because nothing would be worse if they tried that, and then they didn't work. It would set things back millennium.
Look at how this war has been a disaster, and they just act like everything was fine.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it's absurd, but yet I like the fact that they bold and they stick to their guns. When Bork was up for Supreme Court, Reagan's attitude was, I don't care, I'm sticking with him. When Lonnie Guinier mm-hmm. was up for a position, I remember if it was Supreme Court, Clinton punked out right away.
Yeah.
Whether they're wrong or not, these guys don't quit. You were making that point before. William Crystal, he gets these neocons that got us into the mess, they're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the Times, he's got an op-ed Times page, and none of them are sorry. None of them are apologetic. None of them are saying we made a mistake. They, as far as they're concerned, the hell with you. And I understand your point of view that it's absurd to just go in one direction and say, I can't be wrong. But I'd like somebody on our side to try that sometime.
I hear that, definitely. So we got to get moving. But hey, you should be doing a talk show yourself because a lot of very good points you're bringing up.
Yeah, well, you do inspire me.
All right, that's good to know. Thanks so much.
Latimer, Brentwood Library Sunday.
When I announce that one more time?
Chenault Latimer, jazz pianist, Stony Brook graduate, will be playing at the Brentwood Library on Sunday.
Okay, is there any website or anything like that?
Well, I don't really know, but I know he went to your school, and I heard him interviewed on the on your station by Roseanne Hoffman, I believe. Very interesting guy.
Great. Okay.
Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Wow. Yeah, occasionally you get one of those really good phone calls and good conversations, and wow, it wasn't really about the stimulus, but it was pretty interesting and intense and fascinating. So, yes. Let's see if we can squeeze in a couple more. We're not going to take phone calls past, say, 6:35 because we want to give the sports people a chance to set up. So if you have anything to say, not just on that topic, but on the stimulus, if it affects you, how your economical situation is going, things like that. Of course, we're open to any subject. 631-632-9872. Personally, I see opportunity just about anywhere you look. When things are plummeting downwards, that might be an opportunity for somebody to get their foot into a door they ordinarily would not be able to get into. I mean, it does happen. For instance, and I was just able to do this. I was amazed by this. I've got a mortgage. I was able to contact the bank that I have the mortgage with and say, you know, I'd like to get a better interest rate and pay this thing off quicker.
So chop number of years and get a better interest rate. And they said, yeah, sure, we can do that. Just like that. No broker, no nobody. I was just able to call them and get them to do this for me because the economy is in the toilet, because people are foreclosing all over the place. So they're more than happy, even though they're losing money by doing this. I mean, think about it. Why would you agree to give somebody a better interest rate and allow them to pay off a loan quicker? You're losing money by doing that. But they're stumbling over themselves to help you because they don't want you to default. They don't want you to not make payments or have them lose the balance or anything like that, or just have uncertainty. You can get rents at lower rates now. You can negotiate. If you have a lease, you can probably renegotiate it down. If you're looking to buy a house, never been a better time. If you have money saved up, obviously. If you don't have money saved up, then it's a tough time. But everybody has a particular part in this society where maybe something can benefit them if they think about how to do things a little bit differently. So those are the ideas that I think we need to throw around. So how can this bit of bad fortune be used in a good way? Of course, sharing spaces, sharing houses with people, sharing cars, things like that. Those are positive things that can come out of this. It doesn't all have to be bad. There could be some very good things. Okay, let's talk about corruption. I like talking about corruption, one of my favorite topics. Again, we only have a couple minutes if people want to call in, 631-632-9872. Now, this guy, Berlusconi, one of my favorites, Silvio Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy, he just keeps escaping. He just keeps escaping prosecution. Now, an Italian court has sentenced this guy named David Mills. He's a lawyer, a prominent British lawyer, sentenced him today to 4.5 years in prison. Yeah, for taking a $600,000 bribe from Silvio Berlusconi. Yeah. Now, Berlusconi, you might ask why he's not being prosecuted. He was originally also going to be a defendant in the trial. But you know what happened? He was elected prime minister, and he was able to enact legislation to make himself immune from prosecution. So he's able to just sit there and watch this trial and this guy get convicted of taking $600,000 to say nice things about him. And he can totally get away with it. And it gets even better than that. It gets even better. As part of the penalty, this guy has to go to jail 4.5 years. He also has to pay a fine. He has to pay a fine to the prime minister's office. Of course, when they started this trial, Berlusconi wasn't the prime minister. But now he is the prime minister. So this guy who Berlusconi was bribing now has to pay Berlusconi. Unbelievable. Now, there's a long history of Berlusconi getting away with things. What are the court cases, you may ask? He's been involved in 2,500 hearings. He's had 587 visits by the police. He spent 174 million euros in legal fees during his political career. In some cases, the Italian prime minister was found guilty of several charges of illegal party financing, corruption, bribery, and false accounting, but he always won on appeal, thereby avoiding jail. Those bribes, I think, come in handy. However, in most cases, he was either acquitted or time ran out under Italy's statute of limitations. Now, here are some of the cases brought against him. Lodo Mondadori case. Prosecutors claim that in the mid-1980s, Berlusconi paid huge bribes to a judge in Rome during a takeover battle in an attempt to have a rival bid declared invalid. The case went to the appeal court, but the statute of limitations expired before the appeal was completed. So Mr. Berlusconi was acquitted. There's the Telecinco case. Spanish judge Baltazar Garzon accused Mr. Berlusconi of tax fraud and breaching antitrust laws in Spain through his stake in the private Spanish TV company Telecinco. Mr. Berlusconi and all of his co-accused were acquitted. The AC Milan case. Mr. Berlusconi was accused of false accounting over alleged irregularities in the purchase of a player for AC Milan, the football club he owns. The statute of limitations expired, and the case was closed with an acquittal on December 13th, 2005. Okay, you know what? We're not getting any calls, so I'm going to go out of delay, so you can do your plugging in thing, whatever you need to do.
They're not calling in. So, you know, to hell with them. I'm just going to babble on about various other things. So I'm going to go out of delay now. And here I am back live. So we have women's basketball tonight, right?
Yes, sir.
Vermont. Cool. Going to kick their ass.
Pink Zone. Supporting the breast cancer awareness tonight.
Awesome. So people can still come down, right?
Gym, yes.
All right. You might have to fight for parking, but the gymnasium here at the Stony Brook Gym. The game actually starts at what, 7?
7 o'clock. We'll be on the air at 6:45.
Okay. That's in 12 minutes. So, all right. That's coming up. All right. Getting back to the corrupt Prime Minister of Italy. Fininvest case, Mr. Berlusconi was accused of false accounting, with the prosecution alleging he had doctored the accounts of offshore companies that form part of his Fininvest holding company. The statute of limitations expired once again after Mr. Berlusconi's government introduced new laws on false accounting, and he was acquitted. The Medusa Cinema case, Mr. Berlusconi was sentenced to 16 months in jail for false accounting of 10 billion lira. How does he get out of this mess? Well, he appealed and he was acquitted on the charge after the court said the case could not be proven and after the check cleared. Bribing financial police case, Mr. Berlusconi was found guilty on 4 counts and sentenced to 2 years and 9 months in jail. But you know what? The statute of limitations expired for 3 of the charges and he was acquitted on the 4th on appeal. This guy is slippery. He gets away with everything. I mean, you know, I want him on my side. Okay, but he's not out of the woods yet. He could face other charges in other cases. In January, Italy's second largest opposition party, Italy of Values, what a stupid name, Italy of Values, presented, it probably doesn't translate to that exactly, but still, it sounds silly, presented a petition to the country's highest court asking for the immunity law to be revoked. The petition contains twice as many signatures as are needed under Italian law to force a referendum on the issue. Now, if the immunity law is revoked, the 2 corruption cases the prime minister was facing before the law came into force could reopen. But first, the country's constitutional court has to check the validity of the names on the petition. Then a referendum would have to be called, a process that could take months. And, you know, this guy's in his 70s, so he's trying to buy time, I'm sure. Meanwhile, the clock on the statute of limitations for the 2 corruption cases is ticking. I don't know, just to see if we can do it, I think we should try to get Berlusconi in prison on something, because it just seems like he can't possibly go to jail no matter what happens. All right, continuing with corruption. Let's see. How about this? In Pennsylvania, this is a story right out of Charles Dickens' grim 19th century landscape. 2 of Luzerne County's most senior judges last Monday were accused of sending children to jail in return for kickbacks. The judges, Luzerne County President Judge, that sounds powerful, Marg Civarella Jr., 58 years old, and his predecessor, Senior Judge Michael T. Conahan, 56, will serve 7 years in jail under a plea agreement. And you know they're going to be popular in jail. They're alleged to have pocketed $2.6 million in payments from juvenile detention center operators. When a federal judge reviews their plea, the question ought to be whether the punishment is adequate, along with the judges being bounced from the bench, disbarred, and losing their pensions. If the allegations are true, the 2 were involved in a disgraceful cabal far worse than one that merely lined their pockets. First, the judges helped the detention centers land a county contract worth $58 million. Then, their alleged scheme was to guarantee the operators a steady income. How? By detaining juveniles, often on petty things. Many of the kids were railroaded, according to allegations lodged with the state Supreme Court last year by the Philadelphia-based Juvenile Law Center. In asking the court to intervene in April, the law center cited hundreds of examples where teens accused of minor mischief were pressured to waive their right to lawyers and then shipped to a detention center. One teen was given a 90-day sentence for having parodied a school administrator online. Yeah, for running a website, 90 days in juvie. Such unwarranted detentions left both children and parents feeling bewildered, violated, and traumatized, according to center lawyers. Very few people would stand up to the Luzerne judges, according to the law center's executive director, Robert Schwartz. Fortunately, Juvenile Law Center was willing to do so, along with backing from State Attorney General Tom Corbett's office and the State Department of Public Welfare. The blind justices on the state's high court, though, took a pass. Only last month, they offered no explanation in declining to take up the law center's request that the court step up. Now the state Supreme Court should revisit the issue, since the scope of corruption alleged at the Luzerne County Courthouse in Wilkes-Barre could further undermine confidence in the courts statewide. Authorities need to redress running roughshod over juveniles' rights, a process also likely to bring damage suits. While the local district attorney pledges to do our best to right the situation, calls for an independent outside review. The two judges' downfall may have rooted out the worst perpetrators of this evil scheme, but the abuse of power alleged in Luzerne County is so startling that it should send shockwaves for reform around the state court system. Actually, I didn't mention this at first, but that's an editorial from what newspaper is this from? Philly.com is where I got this from, but they don't say what newspaper it's from. Maybe it's just from the website. Okay, well, anyway, it's a pretty accurate summation, I think, as to what happened there based on the testimony, based on the court cases. And pretty scary to see what's possible out there when people are in control, in power. It's not the only case. Let's go to Alabama. The prisoners in the Morgan County Jail in Morgan County were always hungry. The sheriff, meanwhile, was getting a little richer. Alabama law allowed it. The chief lawman could go light on prisoners' meals and pocket the leftover change. And that is just what the sheriff, Greg Bartlett, did, to the tune of $212,000 over the last 3 years, despite a state food allowance of only $1.75 per prisoner per day. In the view of a federal judge who heard testimony from the hungry inmates, the sheriff was in blatant violation of past agreements that his prisoners be properly cared for. There was undisputed evidence that most of the inmates had lost significant weight, according to the judge, U.W. Clement, the federal district court in Birmingham. I could not ignore them, he said. So Judge Clement ordered Sheriff Bartlett himself jailed until he came up with a plan to adequately feed prisoners more than a few spoonfuls of grits, part of an egg, and a piece of toast at breakfast, and bits of undercooked bloody chicken at supper. The shock in the courtroom on Wednesday was palpable. A sheriff was going to jail, if, as it turns out, only for one night, because his prisoners did not like the food. The world was upside down. Here's what the head of the Alabama Sheriff's Association, Bobby Timmons, said. You're never going to satisfy any incarcerated individual. An inmate is not in jail for singing too loud in choir on Sunday. Actually, you might want to check that. I'll bet it's possible. Anytime you defend inmates, people in jail, you're going to get all kinds of criticism. People accuse you of all sorts of things. The fact of the matter is, these are the people who get abused before anybody. And usually they're not the last ones. So if we're smart, we'll keep an eye on what's going on in our prisons and in our schools and with those people that we may feel the least compassion for, because they're the ones that are easiest to victimize. All right, we're pretty much out of time. I want to thank all those people, by the way, writing in who are listening to the new shows, or actually the old shows, The Voice of Long Island, taped here at WUSB in 1981. We're making them available on our website, www.2600.com/voli, V-O-L-I. It's amazing to see the history of this place, to see the history of the world, and to hear it all come back in broadcast quality sound week after week. Every Friday night at midnight, we make a new episode available, and the dates line up. So next weekend will be the 21st of February, and you'll hear it at the stroke of midnight on the 21st of February. So please keep listening, keep writing to us. Our email address is otw@2600.com. We're more than happy to hear all kinds of responses and feedback and things like that. Oh, you know, I want to mention one other thing. Something really cool I got to do the other day was hold a brand new newborn. Yeah, it's the most incredible thing. Have you ever done this? You got to do this. I was afraid of dropping her, but didn't do it. And it's just so cool to see somebody being welcomed into the world for the first time. And I want to wish a special welcome to Emma. Welcome to the planet Earth. This is for you. We'll see you next week.
See you later. 35 degrees on the north shore of Long Island here at 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. You've been listening to Off the Wall here on your Tuesday evening. And now it's time to send you over to the Pritchard Gymnasium, where tonight it is in the pink zone, supporting breast cancer awareness, the Stony Brook Seawolves women's basketball team, as they face the Vermont Catamounts tonight in an America East matchup. Jeff Bernstein with live coverage. Let's send it over to Jeff right now at 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Here at Pritchard Gymnasium, it is pink zone. The Stony Brook Seawolves will take on the Vermont Catamounts here at Pritchard Gymnasium. And the Seawolves come into tonight's contest with a 6-16 record, 4-6 in the America East. Vermont comes in with a record of 14-10, 8-3 in the America East. And as Dave mentioned, yes, it is pink zone here. Breast cancer awareness throughout the WBCA, throughout the entire NCAA this entire week. The Stony Brook Seawolves wearing pink uniforms tonight for the first time in Seawolves history. And everything's pink tonight. A lot of people wearing the pink. You have pink game notes tonight. I can see the pink sheets of paper in the printer. Misha Horsey, the sophomore guard's dad, donated the money tonight to get Stony Brook the pink uniforms and the pink warm-up shirts. So that's a Stony Brook basketball pink zone on the back. So I very